Good morning and welcome into the Friday edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here. Hoping you are having a wonderful day in this crazy little neighborhood called life in the United States of America. It's good to have you along today. I hope you are well and those nearest to you are well as well. And I hope you are looking forward to a great weekend this weekend. Well, I made a little technical change to some settings here, and I'm going deaf as a result. So please allow me to make a quick adjustment because it's just loony. Wow. No, that's not it. Okay. Well, that helped a bit there. All right, then. So here we are facing a Friday, and I'm watching the news this morning, and I always watch the news on a in the mornings as I'm getting ready for things. It's just, you know, part of the regular routine. And so this morning I'm watching Fox and Friends as I'm flipping around, and I see that Geraldo Rivera is on. Now, I'm not a big, if you've been a Mark and Mac Show listener for any amount of time, and you've listened to me here on The Daily Perspective, you know Dave has a lot of respect for Geraldo, Geraldo Rivera. I don't. In fact, when he comes on every Friday morning, he's on Fox and Friends. If I happen to have it on Fox, I find something else to watch because he just rubs me the wrong way. There's just something about the guy. He's a shameless self-promoter. He's smarmy. I just don't like him. That's just me, okay? It's my opinion. If you like Geraldo, good for you. You go with that. You be you. I just, personally, I'm not a big fan. But this morning, I'm watching, and he's actually talking about the insanity that's going on with the Democrats. And it's incredible to watch him and listen to him staunchly, firmly defend President Trump. He actually was condemning the Democrats, and he was defending President Trump. I was shocked. I had to pinch myself. I started asking my dog, is this the real world? Because it was just so weird. But there he was. And I posted this morning, wow, when Geraldo is condemning the Democrats and defending Trump, you know Trump has won over the population. He just has. So things are looking good. His approval rating, by the way, there have been some polls out that reflect his approval rating. And when you look at the poll samples of the different types of people that they ask, Democrat, Republican, Independent, there are fewer Republicans than would normally be represented and more independents than would normally be presented. So in all reality, President Trump's approval rating is most likely well over 50%, not in the upper 40s. It's probably well over 50%. But Geraldo, holy moly, tie me down. Geraldo is defending President Trump. I was amazed. Absolutely amazed. Also, I was amazed when during the same segment they rolled a clip from was it yesterday? James Comey had a sit down with CNN, a little town hall meeting, and if you're on Facebook Live, you'll be able to see what I'm about to put up. So look at your screen because I've got a couple of pictures. So there was this town hall. And James Comey is there, and they get to the section where they have the audience asking questions. And you know how this works. And if you're not aware how this works, let me tell you how this works. Audience members are selected to ask questions. Sometimes we find out that those questions, even though audience members have submitted questions, those questions have been run through a panel of writers and handed back to them on little cards. So they're rephrased, and they're written in the way that CNN wants the questions asked. At any rate, so James Comey is sitting on the stage, and this woman, you'll see her on your screen on the left, there's James Comey on the right, and there's this lady on the left. and she has a question to ask. Do I know what question she asked? No, I don't. I honestly could not focus on her question because I kept looking at her and I kept asking myself, how many years did this woman play with the cast of Cats? That's all I wanted to know. Okay, so, yeah, there she is. I'll put her back up again. It's either that or she's Guy Fieri's mom. She walked past how many mirrors before she left the house? And did the CNN makeup crew get a hold of her or what? Inquiring minds want to know. I just want to know, she looked in the mirror and said, yeah, that's good. I just have to know. did she really leave the house looking like that and think, yeah, I got this? Is she married? Is her husband too afraid of her to tell her, baby, you might want to go back and make another pass? I mean, because holy smokes. Midnight and the kitties are sleeping. Oh, my goodness gracious. Anyway, that's my twisted mind this morning. That's just how things are for me this morning. Oh, my gosh. And that reminds me of this other story that I pulled yesterday and thought, this is one of those things that's going to go in the bottom of the stack, and if I get to it, I'll get to it. But considering what I just saw this morning, I have to get to this story. It's coming to us from PJ Media. And it's written by David Forsmark. And it's called, The More People See of Hillary Clinton, The Less They Like Her. And here we go. For the third time in her life, Hillary Clinton toured the nation hoping to be loved, hoping to break the cycle that the more people see of her, the less they like her. The third time wasn't the charm. This weekend, the Clintons took the Hill and Bill tour to the Forum in Inglewood, California, in what amounts to home turf for them these days. Thanks to low demand, ticket prices plummeted to as low as $2 each. And pundits, who remark on the tour inevitably, point out that she didn't visit Wisconsin this time either. But it doesn't seem to have dampened Hillary's sense of worth or entitlement. After all, she was robbed. Quote, I tell candidates who come to me that you can run the best campaign, you can even become the nominee, and you can have the election stolen from you. That's her latest robotic refrain. She repeats to tiny audiences, from Rachel Maddow to nearly empty auditoriums. Her sycophants on the left keep reminding her she won the popular vote and assert that she was only kept from her birthright of first woman president by small margin victories in swing states where Vladimir Putin and Jim Comey brought just enough voters over to get the outmoded Electoral College to go Trump's way. But the retort to this from the right also fuels Hillary's unjustified self-image. Quote, the Russians did not stop Hillary Clinton from campaigning in Wisconsin. That's what Trump defenders love to point out. But this clever riposte assumes a fact not in evidence, that the more voters saw of Hillary Clinton, the more likely they were to vote for her. And while Democrats like to pretend that Scott Walker was somehow suppressing the vote, the evidence of history suggests otherwise. The biggest voter suppression mechanism in American politics is Hillary Clinton's personality. It is far more likely that if Hillary had campaigned more in Michigan and Wisconsin, those states would have been spared the expense of the Jill Stein recount. You know, until I read this, I had forgotten about the Jill Stein recount. Remember that? Where people sat and bit their lips and thought, what is she up to? For the entire 40 years of Hillary Clinton's public life, one thing has been consistent. The less people see of her, the more popular she is. The deplorables of Arkansas in the late 70s were not thrilled by the snooty feminist from Chicago who refused to take her husband's name. So she was hidden at the Rose Law Firm, where money could be funneled to the Clintons through her supposed legal prowess. That's a continuing theme. Before Obamacare became an epithet, the term Hillary Care was used to stop the Clinton socialized medicine plan of the 1990s. And if you think that Hillary's involvement in it didn't have as much to do with the popular rejection of it as its content did, then you weren't there. Sure, she won in New York after the Republicans went through a candidate shuffle when Giuliani declined to run due to personal issues that seem tame today. But hey, that was New York. Hillary was the inevitable president in 2008 until people had to contemplate 4 years of the screech that Rush Limbaugh wickedly said reminded men of their ex-wives over the dulcet tones of Barack Obama. And so it goes. When Hillary is in the background, her popularity rises. When she is front and center, it goes down. In 2016, her two major opponents sounded like something from a wildly unrealistic political satire. A 74-year-old socialist and a 69-year-old reality TV star. She had to stack the deck to beat one and lost to the other. And there's nothing more deceptive than the charts that show the up and down of Hillary's approval rating during the 2016 campaign. Here's a little clue. They basically range between 40 and 45% in polls that have a 5% margin for error. About a third of Trump voters in every poll say their main motivation was to vote against Hillary. But we're told her campaigning with that shriek in Wisconsin would have made the difference. Give me a break. Late voters went toward Trump, she complains. That proves it was the Russians and Comey. Yes, in every election, the undecideds go for the new thing. In the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton was the closest thing possible to an unpopular incumbent. Late undecideds, as a rule, go 2-1 to the challenger in that situation. Hillary is right, however, when she says, quote, I take responsibility for all my decisions, but that's not why I lost. That is correct. You lost because of who you are, not what you did. America is well acquainted with Hillary Clinton, and the only thing that has ever made hearts grow fonder is her absence. Wow. I love this article, and I'm glad it popped up, and I'm glad I actually read all the way through it, because it's just awesome. There are so many things about this that just are so true. Hillary Care. I remember Hillary Care. I remember when that was going on, and I remember that's what people called it, because people didn't like Hillary. They knew that if they labeled it as Hillary Care, that people would revolt against it. And they did. When people were exposed to Hillary, they were repelled. The stories coming out of the White House at that time, there were so many of them. Stories of fights, profanity, screaming, lamps and ashtrays being thrown, all kinds of things going on in the White House. Her temper was legendary. Her screaming at Bill was legendary. There are people even during her campaign who were Secret Service agents who asked not to be assigned to her because her reputation precedes her. She is not a liked person. She just isn't. And the writer of this article is absolutely right. The more people see of her, the less they like her. The less people see of her, the more they like her. It's really interesting. It's really interesting. He also brings up the Rose Law Firm. A lot of people forgot about that. They stuck her off in that corner so people wouldn't see her. They forgot that she was Hillary Rodham up until they were campaigning for the presidency. And she also referred to it that way, as they were going to be the president. And then she became Hillary Rodham Clinton, or Hillary Clinton. She dropped the Rodham for a while, and then she picked Rodham back up again. Yikes. And people forget that she won in New York after the Republicans went through a candidate shuffle there, because Rudy Giuliani declined to run. He decided, not going to run this time. He had issues he had to take care of. And that's why they ended up voting for Hillary. She wasn't from there, but she ended up being a senator from there. There's so much about the woman that is so distasteful and rubs so many people the wrong way. And every time she sticks her head up out of her little groundhog hole and starts yapping about whatever's happening, it turns opinion against whatever she's talking about. Here in the South, we like to say, bless her heart. More after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad I've had stuff to laugh about this morning. Hey, thank you so much for being there. I know I mentioned it beforehand, but I do appreciate it. Whether you're listening live on Facebook Live, we do this live every weekday morning, Monday through Friday, from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock Eastern, 8 to 9 Central, on the Mark and Mac Show Facebook page. And it's just a little time for me to vent my spleen and to maintain some contact with good friends. And I appreciate you being there. Thanks a lot. Also, through the podcast. The podcast is available in iTunes and in Google Podcasts. You can find it both places. It's also on the Castos podcast hosting service. I'll try to remember to put a link up to that so you can go direct to the source if you want to on a daily basis. But if you want to subscribe and have it delivered directly to your device for personal listening, then go to the iTunes store or to Google Podcasts and search for The Daily Perspective. And you will find the podcast there. Subscribe, and it will come to you each day, not long after the end of the live show. I try to get these posted by 9:30 Central Time so that they're up there. But sometimes there are little technical issues. And those of you who keep track know that I gripe about this, but I check off all the boxes. I click all the things. I do everything I'm supposed to do. Everything looks perfect. I get a link. I actually get the link and go online to another web browser, and I listen to make sure the show is posted, that the podcast version of the show is posted, and it's there. I include the link in the daily newsletter. I click on that when it's delivered. It's there, and then I go look, and it's not there. I really don't know why. I wish I knew why. I really do wish I knew, but it just happens, and I have to go back through the process again. And usually when I re-upload, it works. And I don't know why it doesn't work the first time. Even though the podcast hosting service has the file, and I can go online and listen to the file. It's just, sorry, nerd problems. Colorado. High school shooting. There was a vigil. It was a political stunt. It was evil. It was manipulative. It was wrong. And the students responded appropriately. Gun rights advocates posted support on social media yesterday for students who walked out of a gun control rally in anger and tears over concerns the event inappropriately politicized their grief. The event Wednesday was primarily billed as a vigil to honor Kendrick Castillo, who was fatally shot in a rampage by two students at the STEM school there in Highlands Ranch, Colorado. Speakers at the school's packed gymnasium, however, were mostly politicians and advocates pressing Congress for more restrictive gun laws. After about 30 minutes, hundreds of students from the STEM school stormed out, yelling, "This is not for us. Political stunt. And we are people, not a statement." Candace Craig, who has three kids attending STEM, said it was just too early to push for action. She said the trauma is still fresh for the thousands of parents and their kids who suffered through the shooting and the anxious hours that followed. She says, "We need quiet. We need familiar faces. We need to hold our babies. We will heal, and we will rise stronger and ready to say, enough. But right now, we're shaken, we are broken, we hurt for the families whose worlds were turned upside down with grief and loss. That's what we want the world to hear from us." Wednesday night, the traumatized shooting victims who exited the rally thrust lighted cell phones into the air and chanted mental health, as their hands and voices shook in the cold rain. Angry students pushed and screamed at journalists, demanding to see photos they had taken. Interview requests made by a USA Today reporter were rebuffed. Multiple students said they'd agreed not to talk to journalists. Many students appeared unaware the event was organized by the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. Senator Michael Bennet and Representative Jason Crow, both Democrats, both spoke at length about the need for federal action. The Brady Campaign invited reporters to cover the event. The students drew plenty of support on social media. A Utah woman posted, "These politicians remind me of ambulance chasers, ready to pounce on the next big shooting with their gun control agenda." A Colorado woman posted, "Love this so much. I'm so proud of these students. After some rough political months here in Colorado, this was a welcome sight and hope for the future." In an apology issued afterwards, the Brady Campaign said all efforts should be focused on supporting the STEM students, families, and faculty members. Quote, "We are deeply sorry any part of this vigil did not provide the support, caring, and sense of community we sought to foster and facilitate, and which we know is so crucial to communities who suffer the trauma of gun violence." That's what their statement said. I just have to say, we'll get back to the article here in just a second, but let me just say this. The Brady Campaign knew exactly what it was doing. The Brady Campaign staged a rally for gun control and used these students as props. That is how disconnected from the heart of people the Brady Campaign actually is. That is how disconnected from reality these Democrat politicians are. They want what they want. They want their power and they want their control. And as usual, politicians and leftists like the Brady Campaign don't care about the people. Some STEM students and family members held a private vigil earlier in the day. They said the public and journalists were kept out to permit anguished students and their parents a chance to grieve together, away from the media spotlight into which they have unwillingly been thrust. 18-year-old Castillo was killed and 8 students were wounded Tuesday when 2 teens opened fire in classrooms at the K-12 school specializing in science and math. That's what the STEM, STEM, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. That's what that stands for. Castillo, 3 days away from completing high school, and 2 classmates charged one of the shooters at the school. The avid hunter and fisherman was killed. Colorado Governor Jared Polis signed red flag legislation last month, providing judges with the power to temporarily remove firearms from people believed to be at high risk of harming themselves or others. Now, we have seen already, we've discussed this already this week, the mental conditions of the 2 shooters, whose names I will not say. I will not pronounce their names. I will not utter them here on this program. The victims, yes. The shooters, no. I will not give them the glory they sought. We've discussed the mental conditions of these 2 people. One of them had posted anti-conservative things, hate for Trump, anti-Christian things on his social media. Written on his car was profanity about society and a pentagram on the hood. Mentally ill. Someone who has no grip on reality and hates the world around them because of their twisted view. The second suspect in this Tuesday shooting is a 16-year-old transgender. A girl transitioning to being a boy. By the way, she will always be female. Her DNA will always tell the truth. She is suspected of aiding the 18-year-old shooter who has already been Senatsgerger has already had charges filed against him in committing the shooting that left one student dead and 8 injured. During a Wednesday court appearance, lawyers for this young lady, biologically female, and legally named a female name, ask that their client's preferred pronouns be respected and that she be referred to as he. If your head is spinning, that's because you're right. This is not normal. This is not sane. Disability justice advocate Lydia XZ Brown echoed the legal team's sentiments on Twitter yesterday, urging journalists not to dead name the suspect. Dead naming is calling someone by their birth name, not the name they prefer to have with their new imaginary existence. She said, "Dear every reporter writing about the STEM shooting, Colorado shooting, there is zero reason to publish a trans person's dead name, especially a minor's dead name. This dude is a murderous bleep hole. Neither being trans nor having psych disabilities made him a bleep hole." Really? Here's the thing. This person who is transitioning has mental issues, has lost their grip on reality. And those mental issues are so deep that this young woman picked up a gun that she was not legally allowed to possess. By the way, both of the guns were stolen. And used it to murder people. And these advocates expect us to embrace their insanity while we deal with this issue? I don't think so. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Good to have you along today. I hope you've signed up for The Daily Perspective newsletter. It is a daily publication which comes direct to your inbox and provides you with the links to the stories we talk about during the show. And sometimes my observations, little asterisks below the links. Oh my gosh. There's so much craziness in the world today that it's good to be able to laugh from time to time. And I'm still laughing about the cat lady. I mean, the cat's lady. I just can't get over that. Bless her heart. I mean, once again, what was she thinking? There she is. Holy moly. Maybe she's just anti-mirror. I just don't know. Anyway, it is kind of a damp day in our neighborhood. I hope you're doing well wherever you are. Get that newsletter. I lost track. She totally derailed me, I'm telling you. And the thing is that when I look at my screen on my end of things over here, I have a preview screen that shows what's up or could be up next as far as what's showing on Facebook Live. And right now, that's what the preview screen is right there. I'm not going to tell you on the podcast. You're going to have to go look online at Facebook to see, but that's what's in my preview screen. It keeps derailing me. So what I need to do is I need to change it so that it's something else like that. Yeah, that's better. Okay, so back to things at hand. Get signed up today for the newsletter at markcongleton.com, markcongleton.com. Look on the right side of the page. There's a sign-up form. You'll get an email. That's called a two-stage verification process, a double opt-in process, more legally speaking, and you answer in the affirmative to the email you receive, and you'll be added to the list, and you'll get the links to the articles and my notes on such things each day in your inbox, usually by around 9:30 or so in the morning, Central Time, right after the show, as well as a link to the podcast version of the program, should you care to go listen to that again. Okay? All righty then. Speaking of crazy, and I don't mean crazy cats lady, let's talk about creepy Uncle Joe for a minute. Some of the things that this man says absolutely amaze me. He has been in the public eye for over 40 years, 44, 45 years. He's been in D.C. He has been working in the world of politics. He's deeply corrupt. Just look up. We talked about this the other day, remember? About what about the Ukraine and some of the dealings he's had with his son Hunter there, and all the favors, the strings he's pulled to get keep that guy employed. And it's just incredible how deeply corrupt Joe Biden actually is. He is part of the problem. Donald Trump, the outsider, is working to solve the problem, which is why D.C. hates the man so much. He's upsetting their little apple cart. Well, Democrat presidential candidate Joe Biden said during a campaign stop in California on Wednesday, do you have your seatbelt on? He said the United States has an obligation to give health care to illegal aliens. We have an obligation to provide health care for people who are breaking federal law and on our soil illegally. Quote, I think that anyone who is in a situation where they're in need of health care, regardless of whether they are documented or undocumented, let's just cut through the BS here, Joe, whether they're here illegally or legally. Moving forward, we have an obligation to see that they are cared for. He said this in Los Angeles. He goes on to say, that's why I think we need more clinics around the country. Biden dismissed the notion that many illegal aliens come into the United States illegally through the southern border, despite the fact that immigration arrests along the border are at a 12-year high. The Washington Post reported, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, CBP, detained 109,144 migrants along the boundary with Mexico last month, a 6% increase from March, as monthly arrests reached their highest point since 2007. Unauthorized border crossings have more than doubled in the past year, and they are on pace to exceed 1 million on an annual basis. As Guatemalan and Honduran families continue streaming north in record numbers, with the expectation they will be quickly processed and released from custody. Our apprehension numbers, by the way, this is Carla Provost, the chief of the Border Patrol, told the Senate on Wednesday. She said, our apprehension numbers are off the charts. We cannot address this crisis by shifting more resources. It's like holding a bucket under a faucet. It doesn't matter how many buckets we have if we can't turn off the flow. My greatest concern is that we will no longer be able to deliver consequences, and we will lose control of the border. Hot Air noted that most people do not appreciate how bad the situation is until they read a new report where the acting head of DHS starts describing the number of Guatemalans arriving in the U.S. as a percentage of the country's total population. In a 2017 report, the Federation for American Immigration Reform, that's FAIR, wrote this. At the federal, state, and local levels, taxpayers shell out approximately $134.9 billion to cover the costs incurred by the presence of more than 12.5 million illegal aliens and about 4.2 million citizen children of illegal aliens, anchor babies, if I may translate. That amounts to a tax burden of approximately $8,075 per illegal alien family member and a total of $115,894,597,664. The total cost of illegal immigration to the U.S. taxpayers is both staggering and crippling. In 2018, FAIR estimated the total cost to be approximately $113 billion. So in under 4 years, the cost has risen nearly $3 billion. The massive surge in illegal aliens crossing the southern border is being fueled by lax U.S. policies and particularly a court ruling in 2015 that illegal immigrant parents who travel with children must be released within 20 days. That's according to the Washington Times, which they go on to say that's too little time to complete a court case, meaning the government has no choice but to set the families free in the vain hope that they return for deportation hearings. In case you're wondering, 87% don't. 87% disappear into the fabric of the United States. The Washington Times added that federal immigration authorities have already released 168,000 illegal alien family members into U.S. communities this fiscal year. They have received the message loud and clear, bring a child, you'll be released. We're hearing reports now that people are renting children so that they can take advantage of this ruling, the 2015 court ruling that allows illegal immigrant parents with children to be released within 20 days. They know that if they have a child and they cross the border, that in less than 3 weeks, they'll be free and they can vanish into the fabric of the United States of America, never to be seen again. So what does this have to do with providing health care? The fact of the matter is we are already providing a monumental amount of health care. Do you know anyone who works at a hospital, specifically in the ER? If you do, buy them a glass of sweet tea and ask them how things are at the emergency room these days. Ask them if they've had to hire people who speak Spanish, because that's the only way they can communicate with so many of the people who come in today. Because that's how things are. If you go to an emergency room for a real emergency, and if you've been, for example, let's say you fall off a ladder and break your arm while you're working on your house, you end up in the emergency room, and who are you surrounded by? Yeah, you're right. You're surrounded by people speaking Spanish. Please, don't take this the wrong way. This is not xenophobic. This is not racist. This is just real. We have people living among us today whose first language is Spanish and who won't learn English. They won't assimilate because their purpose in being here is not to become part of us. It is to find jobs and make money and then send that money back where they came from so that more can pay people to smuggle them in. And we see them everywhere. I've told the story more than once about my wife and I doing our shopping at the Oneonta Walmart, and because we live in Blount County in Alabama, and that's the closest one. Or the most, that one's the one we chose. Let's just put it that way. And we would go there, and we noticed that there is a Spanish or a Hispanic food section in the grocery aisles. That there are a lot of Spanish speaking people. And then in 2011, when Alabama passed its own version of the national immigration law, which actually wasn't as strict, we went to buy groceries one weekend, and all of a sudden, there were a lot less people in Walmart. I don't remember at that point seeing any Hispanic people in Walmart. Why is that? Migrant workers here illegally, being paid illegally. It's a real problem. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. I'm glad you're along. I just got to face it. If you weren't here, it'd just be me talking to the dog. So, I'm thankful for my mental health's sake. Thank you very much. We got a bit more than 10 minutes of time left together. Oh, my. I just posted something to social media. It's a quote from Ronald Reagan. It says, when those who are governed do too little, those who govern can and often will do too much. He got it so right. So right. I've said before that what's happened to us here in the United States of America is that we have grown to trust those who we send to Washington, D.C. to represent us. We have grown to just accept that they're going to do the job. They're going to do the job they promised us that they would do. And so, I heard this said once years ago, and it's still true. What we did was we, instead of keeping our head up and watching them, we looked down at the work in our hands. The work of doing our jobs, the work of caring for our families, the work of developing our properties, the work of life. So we were paying attention to our lives and living our lives. Life, liberty, pursuing happiness. That's what we lowered our heads and went back to what our daily lives are supposed to be and stopped watching the people in Washington, D.C. Because after all, they promised us they were going to do things. They promised us that they were going to represent our interests. They told us they were one of us. And they understood what we were concerned about. They knew how we ticked, because they ticked the same way. So, we looked down and got busy about life again, and just expected them to do the job we hired them to do. And then at some point later, sometimes much later, we looked up and we saw how bad things were and how little the people we had trusted had done to fix things. And in most cases, we saw how much these people we elected had done to mess things up. And as a result, we were not happy. And that is what gave birth to the Tea Party movement. That is what gave birth to the move to replace, to put a president in office who was not part of the good old boy insider club in Washington, D.C. Because enough time has gone by, and enough dirty water has gone under the bridge and over the dam, so to speak, that now, excuse me, those who are in Washington, D.C., who had been trusted to do what their constituents sent them to do, enough time has gone by that these people are deeply entrenched, and they have a lot of time and effort and energy invested in their wrongdoing. And they owe people. They have made relationships with people who influence them more than we do. And as a result, these people put demands on the people supposedly representing us, and they will fulfill those demands before they'll fulfill ours. Enter the picture a man who is a multi-billionaire, who can't be bought by these special interests because he's already got all the money he needs, who's not going to be influenced by the political hacks because the reason he decided to run was because he saw everything that was broken and he wanted to fix things. And for the past couple of years, that's exactly what he's been doing. He's been delivering on the campaign promises he made to the people. You remember the people. Those people whose heads had been down and then looked up and decided we need a change. Those people who were ignored by the pollsters and the news media. Those people who went to rallies all over the country and packed facilities to the brink. Those people who stood in standing room only areas outside and watched big video projection screens so they could see this guy and hear what he had to say. Those people, you are probably one of them. That's what gave birth to us. We finally got sick of business as usual in Washington, D.C. We finally got sick of people lying to us and talking down to us. We finally got sick of the gamesmanship. We finally got sick of being treated like a lower class of people because we weren't among the gifted elite in Washington, D.C. We woke up and realized that the people who we sent to serve us were now attempting to rule us. And we decided it's time to break the system and fix the problems for real. And so, we went to the polls in 2016. We rejected the serpent from the snake pit of Washington, D.C., and elected the businessman. We were fully aware of his problems and his past. We were fully aware of his weaknesses and his strengths. We were fully aware he was not perfect. We were fully aware he's been married a few times and he's fooled around. We were fully aware that he was a wheeler dealer and he had made some enemies. We were completely and totally aware he was not the Messiah. And we voted for him anyway, because he was not part of the problem. As a result, he has been doing the job we elected him to do. We don't hear much about it because the mainstream press is progressive and doesn't want to admit he is succeeding. They want to focus on what's salacious. And the Democrat Party and the inside swamp dwellers in the Republican Party, the deep state, want things the way they were before. Before this rabble-rouser came in and started causing problems for them. So you won't hear about the success rate unless you do a little digging on your own. You won't hear about the unemployment rate being at its lowest in how long since we first stepped on the moon. You won't hear about the massive increase in black employment. You won't hear about the success rate of small business, the growth. You won't hear about women benefiting from what has happened. And you won't hear that 50% of all of the campaign contributions for the next campaign, the 2020 campaign for Donald Trump, are coming from women. Because the progressive press is focused on Russia, collusion, and obstruction. They're taking their talking points from the Democrats and the never-Trump Republicans, who are working on a plan to defeat Donald Trump in 2020. Yes, Republicans are. There are Republicans, part of the problem, who are, as we speak, working on a plan to run someone against Donald Trump to split the vote. This is something you need to be aware of, because you're going to start seeing this rising in the months to come. And you need to be aware that those who are coming up against Donald Trump, those people, those are swamp dwellers. They're deep staters. They're people who created all the problems he's trying to solve. It's a dirty, dirty thing. But that's business as usual for Washington, D.C. And you and I, we got tired of business as usual a long time ago. And we want to keep fixing the problems, don't we? Yep, we do. And that's it for this day and this week. I hope it's been good for you. We'll see you after the weekend on the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective. God bless you. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.